G'day folks, and welcome to another episode of Stick With It, APA's podcast for its pilots. Today I'm joined by Matt Warburton. Matt recently joined APA as our new head of legal and has been very busy. His feet have barely hit the ground since he's been in the job, dealing with a lot of things both at the micro and the macro level. So welcome to you, Matt.
Thanks.
Now, Matt, before we sort of get into the conversation, I'm interested if you can give our listeners some information about your legal background before you joined APA.
Sure. So I've been practicing law, and in particular industrial relations law and employment law, for over 20 years now. Prior to being a lawyer, I was an industrial officer for a trade union for 10 years prior to that. So all up, 30 years of IR. But during my career, I've acted for corporations and employers as well as unions. I started with unions. I spent most of my career working for corporates, and I've now come back to where my heart is, which is working for a union.
Oh, well, it's good to have you on the team. So I know that we've had a bit of turnover in our legal team, but can you just give our listeners an idea of how many people are working for you and sort of the different skill sets that exist within that team?
Sure. There's four lawyers, including myself, in APA and the APA Legal and IR team. And we've got head of legal, me. We've got two senior lawyers and an in-house lawyer who's a more junior lawyer. But we're probably looking to put on a paralegal as well to help with some research things. I think we've got a really good mix of skills in that team. My career has been all about development of other lawyers. So, my ethos and my goal here is to really make sure that all the lawyers in the team get the development they need to sort of go on and improve and grow their career.
Now, can you give our members a bit of insight into the services that your team provides to both APA on that macro level, but also to the individual members on a micro level?
Yeah, at a macro level, we have subject matter experts within the team that deal with, for example, by airline. So we've got a long haul, short haul, Jetstar, and other airline subject matter experts. So they're responsible for knowing all there is required to be known about that airline. And they're also responsible for really providing the support services in relation to bargaining, which is clearly the key, value add that we and that the association provides to pilots. In addition to that, everyone works across all airlines for individual matters. So, we have something between 70 and 100 matters on at any one time, and they are allocated to team members, and we like to talk to our members and get their stories, and then hopefully help them achieve whatever it is that they want to achieve with the company. Most of the time we are able to do that.
So from a member perspective, if they believe that they require APA legal assistance, what is the best way for them to make contact with your team?
Yeah, just call or email is the best way. If it's urgent, by all means, call, And actually, we try and answer the phone all the time. So most of the time, someone in legal will actually answer the phone if you call. If it's less urgent and you want to send an email, or you want to attach documents, or, it's got more detail, or there's a detailed email trail from Qantas that you want to share with us,
yep,
then, send us an email.
So in terms of that, is it, if a member has an issue that they've been dealing with the company, is it worthwhile them trying to resolve the matter with the company first, and then if they're unsuccessful and there is that paper trail, that they then come to the legal team, or are they better off going to you first?
No, look, they are absolutely better off trying to resolve the matter with Qantas, the company, in the first instance. If you look at the grievance procedures and the disputes procedures in the EA, they all require that. Obviously, if it's an urgent matter, if there's a disciplinary hearing or there's some sort of, safety issue, then, contact us direct. There's no problem. We'll tell you if you need to go back to Qantas. But as a general rule, contact the company first.
So I know, for example, sometimes we've got people with issues with, say, pay or payslip issues. It feels to me that that's the one where they're better off trying to basically sort the problem out with the company first. And then come to you if they're not
and
happy.
And you know
what?
Sometimes you're going to get a more positive response from someone in payroll. They'll say, "Yeah, I'll fix that for you." Whereas if we raise an issue, I guess everyone's like, "Oh, the lawyers are here." You know what I mean? So sometimes if it's a minor issue or a pay issue, you might not want to lawyer up, as it were.
Yep.
Because once you lawyered up, there's a certain response that comes from the company.
Okay. But again, our members can even ring you to get your opinion on which way they should go first if they're in doubt.
Absolutely. No problem at all.
Okay. Now, in terms of APA's legal capability purely in-house, is that how it works? Or do you guys seek external assistance for certain matters, such as last year when we had the 380 second officer dispute? I'm just trying to work out where the capability lies.
Yeah, look, we will seek external advice from time to time. It's usually where it involves a fine point of law. It might be something that we haven't dealt with before in-house. But we will always manage that external provider on behalf of APA. And so, you know, often a big part of in-house function is managing external providers. So you don't just, because you can't be an expert in everything. You just can't be. So sometimes you'll get to a point where you go, oh, I just don't know the answer to that. And you've done your research and you go, all right, I've got to go and get external counsel. But we also manage that external counsel to make sure that APA is getting value for money. So the questions that you ask external lawyers dictates how much you pay them. So asking very narrow, precise questions means that you save a lot of money for APA. And that's something that in-house lawyers are very good at.
Right. And I guess an example of that is the 380 dispute, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a minute, where again, you need at federal court, you've got a, I believe it's like an SC representing APA on our behalf, because you need that external sort of expertise for that or not?
You know what? Strictly speaking, I could appear in the federal court, no problem.
Right.
So there's no rule, because the you know, we're a merged profession now. But the reality is that if you go into the federal court or the Supreme Court or even the district court, you're going to instruct counsel.
Right.
Because they're in there every day, you know, and your matter's just going to run much more smoothly with counsel there. I'd be sitting next to counsel giving them instructions. But the reality is that you would instruct external counsel for high court, federal court, Supreme Court, district court matters.
Right. So, Matt, I understand the 380 dispute has been resolved and it was good news for APA. Can you give us a bit of an insight into the judgment and what the ruling was?
Sure. How it started was that Qantas actually sued APA for alleging that we had breached the enterprise agreement. And specifically, they argued that we had breached the enterprise agreement by unreasonably withholding our agreement to them, effectively bypassing the seniority system for promotions and training for second officers in the 380. And so we were able to have a win on that. The federal court supported APA's position and ruled that APA did not act unreasonably in withholding their agreement. And in fact, the judge in the federal court made reference to all of the reasonable actions that APA had taken during the dispute, including that the APA Committee of Management had properly considered the issues and that they had decided not to reach agreement. They had given reasons and they minuted those reasons. So, you know, the COM acting reasonably was one of the big reasons that we were successful in that matter. Federal court judge also made reference to the fact that we put up other options for them. We mentioned their right to bypass under the enterprise agreement. So that was important as well, as was the fact that we engaged lawyers and that lawyers spent a lot of time looking at what was reasonable and what was not. And as a result of that, we were successful.
Yeah, it's a good example, I think, as you say, that COM didn't fly off the handle. It didn't escalate the situation. It worked through the process. And it is interesting to hear that obviously the judge viewed the actions of APA from a responsible perspective as a part of contributing to why we potentially won the judgment.
Yeah, I think that's right. I understand when you're not in the legal sort of environment, people might want to respond in a certain way. But in any legal environment, all the parties have an obligation to act reasonably at all times. And whenever you go outside that rule, there's going to be problems from a legal perspective. So, yeah, good win for us.
But can you give us then a bit of an idea why it took 12 months for us to get the judgment on the 380 case?
Oh, it's just how busy they are, you know. I mean, obviously, when the judges are writing their decisions, they have to be very careful. They're subject to appeal, and it's in the interest of the administration of justice that they get it right the first time, right? So that's the standard view about why they have to take their time. But the reality is that they just are writing a lot of decisions. They're hearing a lot of matters. They're writing a lot of decisions. And it's just a factor of how busy the courts are for how long you have to wait. The good news is that, you know, that's where a matter's been heard to hearing fully, you know, and that is pretty rare. So if you're talking about how long does it take you to get into mediation in the federal courts, much quicker.
Right.
You know, if you file a dispute in the Fair Work Commission, you're in there in a matter of days. So yes, the federal court takes a long time, but the number of matters that we end up taking to hearing in the federal court, very limited. So yeah, it takes a while, but yeah, there are good other avenues that we avail ourselves of if we can.
So moving, that sort of takes on to my next question, which I'm interested in some insight into, you know, the considerations of determining whether to take legal action to try and resolve a dispute. You know, I'm assuming there are many steps in the process before you reach the decision. And I ask the question because I think sometimes our members get frustrated the way that sometimes the company can kind of just slow grind an issue, and that they potentially feel like, you know, well, let's take it to court, and it's not quite as simple as that. So it's a long question, I know, but I'm just curious, you know, as to what some of those considerations are determining whether or not you do actually uplift to a legal action.
It really does happen. The decision happens on a case-by-case basis. You know, there will be some cases where you go, absolutely, we should just go straight to, for example, the Fair Work Ombudsman, because there's been, you know, systemic underpayments in a particular part of the airline, right? Yep. Now, that's not a decision that takes a long time. We give Qantas warning. We say, we're going to do this, get it fixed, and we'll give you 2 weeks to get it fixed. And if it's not fixed, then we'll, you know, tell our members to go to the Fair Work Ombudsman and they can file a complaint. So that's an example of where you can act pretty quickly. But if you're talking about, enforcing terms of an enterprise agreement, it's almost always better to do that through using your industrial power than it is using your legal power. Legal power, you know, litigation is driven by emotion, and litigation has inherent risks. It doesn't matter how confident you think you are or how right you are. Litigation has an inherent risk. So from our perspective, it's actually appropriate, and it's actually an appropriate use of the association's resources to try and resolve those issues in any other way other than legal action.
And you're referring to things like, so that's where we've got a long-haul consultative and short-haul consultatives. So they obviously, that's the industrial element you're talking about, where you would go and meet with a company and you say, look, you try and basically negotiate your way to an agreed outcome. And I guess what the thing that I know frustration can arise from the pilots is obviously that can take time, because potentially you only meet once a month, and then you need, there's back and forth. But as you said, obviously you're really, the last resort is then uplifting that to legal action.
Yeah, it's got to be the last resort. It's true that some of the mechanisms are slow, but they're still better than going to court.
Is that just because of the, as you're saying, just the risks and the money?
The inherent risk and the cost.
So what do you mean by the
delay? And the delay. So it takes 12 months to get a decision, right? So if you think, you know, if you think the consultative committee is slow, wait until you end up in the federal court. You know, it's just the way it is. And unfortunately, like we absolutely should go straight to action whenever we can. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But there will be some cases, particularly. So we have a funny legal system in Australia where the Industrial Relations Commission has the power to conciliate and arbitrate disputes, but you can't enforce an agreement in the Fair Work Commission, right?
Yep.
You've got to go to what's known as a Chapter 3 court. And so when you're talking about forcing Qantas to do something that they've said they would do in an enterprise agreement, that requires you to go to a Chapter 3 court, and that's when you hit those delays.
Okay. Which is, I guess, why, again, you know, trying to maintain at least a civil relationship with Qantas at that industrial sort of level is beneficial, because ideally you still want to try and sort stuff out in that room.
Absolutely.
Rather than in court.
You've got to have a working relationship. You can't have a relationship that's filled with vitriol. Well, you can, but you'll never, ever again get something through that relationship other than vitriol, you know. And so you do have to make decisions sometimes about, well, which battles are we going to fight? Let's pick the ones that we know we're going to win. Let's not fight losing battles. Let's fight them in a way. You know, I think I hear pilots often say, you know, disagree well, which I agree with, you know, so let's fight them in a way where we disagree well, you know, and also let's act with a modicum of responsibility when we have power. Because, you know, something that struck me since joining the pilots is the amount of power that we do have within the enterprise agreements. So maybe it doesn't feel that way sometimes for pilots, but from a lawyer's perspective, I look at that and go, you know, right. You know, that's a lot of power. And so, and a lot of discretion and a lot of decision-making ability. And so whenever you have that power, with that power comes responsibility. And we really need to remember that when we're making decisions.
Now, is there anything else you wanted to add just in terms of about your legal team or just, you know, reminding people of, you know, how to get in touch or anything to do with that?
No, great. Just get in contact, I think. I mean, I think we love talking to pilots. You know, everyone's really friendly and nice and, enjoying the role.
All right. Excellent. Well, look, it's been good to chat. As I said, look, I find that that's really interesting just to give everyone a bit of context as to the considerations at play with, you know, all the various parts of industrial negotiating and also just giving our members an insight into if they do have their own sort of level at their own issue, their own situation, that they also can get in contact with our legal team who will be more than happy to help you out. So again, Matt, thank you very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark. See you, mate.
No worries. Thank you very much. That's the end of today's podcast. Appreciate you listening in. In the meantime, fly safe and stick with it.